This is Engenuity, a Boilermaker engineering podcast. This episode will discuss building a semiconductor ecosystem.
Welcome to the Engenuity podcast, featuring some of the latest inspiring and innovative stories from Purdue Engineering. I'm Arvind Raman, Boilermaker alumnus and Dean of Engineering. Today's episode deals with semiconductors and chips, which are at the heart of everything humans do these days. From the first working transistor at the Bell Labs in 1947 to the billions of transistors in the chip of an iPhone today, modern chips are some of the most fiendishly complex engineered devices ever built. And they're getting even more complex. On one hand, semiconductor engineers have come up with ingenious ways to roughly keep pace with doubling the number of transistors on a chip every 2 years, also known as Moore's Law. On the other hand, the race is on for chips with mind-boggling power that are needed to fuel the dawn of the age of artificial intelligence. And to top that all off, precisely because chips are of such critical national security interest, the CHIPS Act aims to onshore or nearshore semiconductor manufacturing. This is helping attract semiconductor fab plants to West Lafayette, including MediaTek, and the most recently planned several billion-dollar investment in an advanced chip packaging facility by SK Hynix, which dominates the high-bandwidth memory, or HBM, market, and whose chips get bundled with NVIDIA's most advanced graphic processor units. Purdue is America's semiconductor university. And to help unpack all this, my guest today is Mark Lundstrom, Purdue's Chief Semiconductor Officer. Dr. Lundstrom is the Don and Carol Seifris Distinguished Professor of Electrical and Computer Engineering and a member of the U.S. National Academy of Engineering and the American Association for the Advancement of Science. He previously worked at Hewlett-Packard on semiconductor process development and manufacturing. Welcome, Dr. Lundstrom, to Engenuity.
Thank you, Arvind. It's always a pleasure. I'm always happy to talk about semiconductors with another Boilermaker alumnus.
That's great. Dr. Lundstrom, if you could just get started telling us a little bit about Moore's Law, which states that the number of transistors on each chip doubles roughly every 2 years. Is that still valid?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question, and a lot of people are talking about it. There's a little bit of a debate going on. We're still putting more and more transistors on a chip. It's getting harder and harder. It's taking a little longer than 2 years. But the people that are closest to this can see a way forward at least for another 10 years to continue putting more transistors on a chip. Maybe it'll take 3 years to double. Maybe it'll take four. And, you know, engineers tend to be pretty conservative when they make their projections. If they say we can do this for another 10 years, we'll probably do it for another 20 years.
Well, that's great. And as you see advances being made currently, what's the role of advanced packaging to help meet Moore's Law these days? Yeah.
So people are looking at advanced packaging really as the way to continue to drive progress in electronics and feed this voracious appetite that AI has for more computing and more memory. Moore's Law is slowing. We need to look for other ways to advance the performance of electronic systems. So advanced packaging is all about not putting more transistors on a chip, but putting more chips in a package and putting them in such intimate contact that it is almost as though they function as one very large chip.
Oh, so that's interesting. We're able to meet the demands without necessarily beating the physics.
That's right. And we'll probably start counting the number of transistors in a package instead of the number of transistors on a chip. And we'll have trillions of transistors in a package.
Trillions of transistors. Mind-boggling indeed. Dr. Lundstrom, why is it that high-end semiconductor manufacturing mostly happens overseas now?
Well, you know, it's not only high-end, it's also low-end. So something like 90% of our advanced semiconductor chip manufacturing has been outsourced overseas to sophisticated companies like TSMC. It just made good business sense. It costs about 30% less to build one of these factories overseas than it does in the U.S. And over the decades that we have been doing this, they have really honed their manufacturing skills, so they're extremely good at this. Now, we've also outsourced 98% of the low end, the packaging of the chips, not the advanced packaging we've been talking about for the future, but the low end, because that's a very labor intensive, low margin business. It just made good business sense to outsource that as well. And then, of course, when the pandemic came, we realized that there are trade-offs involved when everything is outsourced.
Right. And so in that regard, this news that we heard earlier in the week that SK Hynix is investing in a new advanced packaging plant for memory, why is it such a big deal for the U.S. and the Midwest in general?
This is really a very big deal for us. It will create a significant number of high-paying jobs for Hoosiers. It'll provide opportunities for our students for co-ops, internships, full-time experiences. Not only are they building a fab, they're building an R&D facility. So they'll be an intimate part of the R&D effort in the U.S., working with our faculty and graduate students. So this is really, this is an area of the country that hasn't seen much of this industry, but I think this is an indication that with the talent here and with the capabilities that we have, this is probably the first of several announcements that we're going to see like this.
The, from the crossroads of America, I guess we're evolving to the Silicon Heartland right here in Indiana. Exciting, exciting. Yeah. Now, the CHIPS Act is helping bring some of that critical semiconductor manufacturing and packaging supply chain back to the U.S., including the latest news, of course, from SK Hynix. But what are the larger ecosystem challenges that you see as we try to bring back semiconductor manufacturing to the United States? Workforce, supply chains, labor, automation, energy, all those aspects. Yeah. What else do we need to be thinking about?
Well, workforce is the number one. When you talk to semiconductor company CEOs and you ask them, what's the biggest challenge? What keeps you up at night? It's workforce. Mm. We're building factories. Where are we going to find the engineers and skilled technicians for these new plants that we're building? Also securing our overseas supply chain. We can't do everything in the U.S. So there's a lot of work going on right now, a lot of discussions in places like Costa Rica, Mexico, Dominican Republic, Brazil, even Vietnam, in moving the parts of the supply chain to companies that we or to countries that we just feel are going to be dependable and reliable for the long term.
Oh, that's fantastic. Now, Dr. Lundstrom, you have been instrumental in helping Purdue play an outsized role in meeting the semiconductor challenge. Purdue created the nation's first comprehensive semiconductor degrees program as a focal point for research, teaching, fab innovation, collaborations with the private and public sector, and most particularly, workforce development. In fact, the Washington Post has said that, quote, by rapidly expanding chip education, Purdue is aiming to graduate 1,000 semiconductor engineers annually as soon as possible. Purdue is rolling out new courses and labs for undergraduates, a new master's program, and a push to place students in chip internships, unquote. That sounds like a lot. Dr. Lundstrom, what are some of the highlights of what Purdue is doing, especially around workforce development for the semiconductor industry?
Okay, well, thank you, Arvind. This is, I believe, the nation's most ambitious effort to develop the workforce for this industry that we're reshoring. And I don't know of any other university that has made the commitment that the College of Engineering has made and the university has made to helping the nation address really its most urgent, immediate challenge. The program is very special. You know, we've been teaching semiconductor courses since the late 1960s. What's different now is that we're not just teaching them in electrical engineering. This is a college-wide effort. Now it's expanding across the university. There is such a broad need for talent in this industry, whether you're a materials engineer, a mechanical engineer, an electrical engineer, a computer scientist, an industrial engineer, a data scientist. There are just an enormous number of exciting career opportunities for our students, and that's what's exciting about this program. So, you know, there are two particular new courses that we've launched that I'm most proud of. One we call Changing the World with Chips. And this is a course where a different company comes in every week and talks about what they do, you know, what their role is in the semiconductor ecosystem, what kind of career opportunities there are for students in their industry, in their part of the business. It's directed at first-year students. We maxed out for 2 years in a row now the size of the classroom. So we're adding a second session every fall. So students are really paying attention. And if we get students excited about careers in semiconductors, what we do next is we offer a very special summer program. Now, we've been doing summer research experiences for students for 20 plus years. And it's a wonderful program. It pairs a student with a faculty member, and they work with graduate students in the professor's lab. This is different. It's very focused on semiconductors. It's in an intense semiconductor experience, 8 weeks long. One track is on how to design a chip. One track is on how to manufacture or make chips. There'll be a third track on advanced packaging in the coming summer. And the idea is to prepare students, get them excited about considering this among the many career opportunities that they have, and prepare them to do internships with these companies that are supporting these students after their sophomore year. So, you know, when we launched this course, we hoped last summer for maybe 50 students. We had more than 500 apply. And that's been a big question. With all of the opportunities that students have, could we get them excited and interested in pursuing careers in this industry? And we're getting all kinds of signals that we can. This year we set an even more ambitious goal, 100 students in the summer program. But we had to shut off applications the first week of February because we had well over 750 applications. So students are interested in what this is all about. They're excited about the career opportunities, and that's really gratifying to see.
Well, to our audience, you heard it right here. No better place to learn about semiconductors than here at Purdue University. It's so exciting, Dr. Lundstrom. I feel like I need to get back into this myself and take some of these classes.
and Arvind, just getting back to Purdue for a while, we're beginning to see new students coming here, and they're saying, well, you know, they applied to several different universities, and I asked them, why did you come to Purdue? And they thought, well, I'm interested in semiconductors. Maybe I should go to Purdue. So we're getting more and more of that kind of reputation as the semiconductor university.
How about that? How about that? Dr. Lundstrom, what's the next frontier? You know, once the advantages of advanced packaging and chiplets have been realized and, you know, advanced lithography techniques have met the limits of physics. What lies beyond 10 years plus? What will engineers be working on to roughly meet Moore's Law a decade or more from today?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question. You know, frankly, I think no one can predict what's going to happen 10 years from now. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you a story. My first job in the semiconductor industry was 50 years ago. In the coming September, it'll be 50 years that I've been in this industry. And I worked for Hewlett-Packard. At that time, every company manufactured its own chips. And we were making our own chips. Hewlett-Packard had a crash program underway at that time because they saw the end of optical lithography. And he said, it's just basic physics. You can't make a pattern smaller than the wavelength of the light. Well, actually, you know, you tell an engineer that, and that's a challenge to them. We actually learned to make several different ways to make patterns smaller than the wavelength of the light used to expose the pattern. And then we manufactured ultra-sophisticated tools that had shorter and shorter wavelengths. And, you know, last spring break, we took 22 Purdue students to Europe on a semiconductor study abroad experience. We spent a day at ASML, who makes this very sophisticated lithography tool. And you know, Arvind, they have a 20-year roadmap. You know, so this isn't going to end anytime soon. And frankly, I think as long as I'm on this planet, we'll be living in a CMOS-centric world.
That is fantastic. You know, you mentioned your career, 50-year career, remarkable career, if I may add, in semiconductors. Can you tell us a little bit about how you got interested in semiconductors in the first place? And like, what was your personal journey to deciding this is what you wanted to do? And why are you so passionate about it?
Yeah. Well, you know, like many students, sometimes you just take a course and it just resonates with you and you think, wow, this is cool. This is for me. You know, as a kid in high school, you know, I was a ham radio operator and I tinkered around with electronics. I knew there were chips. You know, at that time, chips had maybe tens of transistors or maybe 100 in the most sophisticated one. I knew they existed. And then when I was a junior undergraduate, I took a course from, you know, someone who had just left industry. He had spent his career setting up semiconductor factories in different places. He had done one in Motorola in Arizona at that time. He came back and he was teaching this course and he said, you know, class, I've been out of the industry for 2 years now. It moves so fast that I cannot tell you what it's like. And I thought, okay, that's really exciting. He says, you know, we can only talk about some general principles. We read Gordon Moore's paper. We studied the yield mechanisms. We talked about how you decide how many transistors you put on a chip until the yield drops so much that it's better to put them on several chips. And I thought, this is really cool. This is interesting. So I stayed one more year and got a master's degree, worked in the semiconductor lab at University of Minnesota, another land-grant university. And then my very first job was in semiconductor process development for Hewlett-Packard. We were building desktop computers at that time. And I was working on a 5-micrometer process. This was really pushing the state of art. This was really difficult to make this work. The previous process was a 7-micrometer process. 5 is 7 divided by the square root of 2. So the area of the transistor is half. We could put twice as many on a chip. We were on Moore's law. We weren't really thinking about it, and we had no idea how long it would continue. But, you know, and I've been in the field ever since. I spent a few years at Hewlett-Packard, came back to Purdue to do my PhD, and I've been working in semiconductors ever since. You know, it's an exciting field. You know, it's the most sophisticated technology that human beings manufacture. It's foundational to the life as we know it would not exist without this technology. And to have had an opportunity to spend my career working in this field and teaching other students how to enter this field and contribute to it, I've just been very lucky.
Dr. Mark Lundstrom, leader, innovator, and teacher extraordinaire. The Mark Lundstrom Research Group explores the physics and technology of nanoelectronics devices. As early as the 1990s, he founded the Purdue University Network Computing Hubs, which provided online simulation services for research and education in micro and nanoelectronics. His work there led to the creation of the Network for Computational Nanotechnology and the nanohub.org, which today serve the nanotechnology community worldwide. Check out Purdue and semiconductors at the website engineering.purdue.edu/semiconductors. This is Arvind Raman signing off this episode of Ingenuity.
This has been Ingenuity, a Boilermaker Engineering podcast. For more information on some of the issues discussed in this podcast, go to the Engineering homepage and click on the podcast icon on the upper right.